This podcast is brought to you by the Village of Bedford Park, your home for business. Over 450 businesses strong and growing with a safe, reliable Lake Michigan water supply. Visit VOBPbiz.com and bring your business home to the Village of Bedford Park.
This is Chicago's all-news station, News Radio 780 and 105.9 FM. Now, the WBBM Noon Business Hour.
WBBM News Time, 1205. It's great to have you with us for the Tuesday edition of the Noon Business Hour. I'm Cisco Codo.
And I'm Chris Kreidel. We have sunny skies today. Expect a high temperature around 50. Currently, 45 degrees at O'Hare.
The Noon Business Hour is presented by Old Second Bank. Let's kick things off with an update of Wall Street at Bloomberg. Here's Elisa Parenti.
Cisco and Chris, some U.S. officials are concerned that China is pushing back against American demands in trade talks. Bloomberg reports progress is slowing toward a deal, and that has stocks pairing gains. So the Dow is up 95 points now, or a third of a percent. NASDAQ higher by 35, S&P gaining 11. The Bloomberg WBBM Chicago Index higher by a quarter percent. Chinese negotiators have shifted their stance with the view that while they've agreed to changes to their intellectual property policies, they haven't gotten assurances from the Trump administration that tariffs imposed on their exports would be lifted. We've got crude oil futures headed lower by about 0.4% to $58.85 a barrel. Back to you.
Thanks, Elisa. On today's Noon Business Hour, banker Jamie Dimon says that tariffs may be paying off after all. And Apple's busy this week announcing new products.
Starbucks making significant changes to its rewards program as it seeks to keep up with other retailers. And cord cutters, if they finally reach the end of the line. It's so expensive to have packages with many different outlets. All of that and loads more on today's Noon Business Hour.
The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
Starbucks is making a change in its customer loyalty program. We'll get details in our next segment. But right now, the latest meeting of the Federal Reserve is underway in Washington. And while the report on orders for factory goods leads today's data, we are joined by Lance Roberts, Chief Investment Strategist at Clarity Financial in Houston. Welcome back to the Noon Business Hour. Lance, tell us about what you're seeing.
Always happy to be here. Thanks for having me. First of all, we're seeing a lot of, interesting data coming out in the first quarter of this year. Retail sales have shown a lot of signs of weakness. We've seen some real slowdown in core factory orders, core durable goods orders. And a lot of that's not surprising. You know, the last time that I was on with you, we talked about the impact of we'd seen a pickup in economic growth. And while a lot of that had been attributed to Trump policies, the reality was that was a lot of pickup that occurred from all the hurricanes. We had three major hurricanes, two major wildfires in late 2017, and that created that pop in economic activity in the first half of 2018. And now that's starting to roll off. So now we're trying to get back to, the running run rate, so to speak, of the economy, which continues to be right around 2%. And that's why interest rates also remain right around 2.5%. So, you know, it's not surprising to see some of the activity here, but the slower economic activity is why the Fed has now changed their opinion about hiking interest rates.
Tell me if this is out of context, but this report, one of the reports that we're seeing, shows decreases in orders for computers and electric products. What does that mean?
Well, a lot of that, we're seeing two things. One is that, part of the, issue of what's happening with trade, and I know this is one of the topics we'll get to today, is, of course, reduced orders for technological equipment coming from China. And we have seen a decrease. So we do, on average, about $15 billion-ish a month in terms of exports to China. That's dropped to about $2 billion. So not surprising, you're seeing weakness in technology, you're seeing weakness in semiconductor sales, et cetera. And so the hope is that if we can get this trade resolution put behind us, then we'll see a pickup in activity in those particular areas. But yes, absolutely, right now we're seeing some slowdown in those areas in particular.
You have a Fed that in recent years has been more open with information, especially on what it's seeing going forward. Is that, when it comes to investment, is that a challenge? Because as you're describing here, any sort of economic conditions that go on and are unforeseen could cause the Fed to change.
Well, I think this was a mistake, in my opinion, that the Fed made about being more vocal and more open into the open marketplace, because think about this for just a moment. If the Fed came out tomorrow after the meeting and said, you know what, guys, you know, all the stuff we've been doing over the last decade really hasn't worked a whole lot. The economy's not getting any stronger. And in fact, we're probably going to have a recession in the next, you know, couple of months. Well, immediately the markets would panic. We would sell off. We would be, in effect, a recession. It would cause a recession simply by what if they actually told us the truth. So this is why we spend so much time in the financial industry trying to parse through the Fed statement, trying to figure out what they're actually trying to tell us versus what the headline reads are, because they can't really tell us, you know, of what's going on. And I think that the Fed was better at when they remained, you know, not visible. They just acted behind the scenes. They worked on monetary policy and were less vocal about the markets. And I think a lot of volatility we've seen in the markets last year in particular. Remember in October, Jerome Powell comes out and says, hey, we're way away from the neutral rate. The markets tank. We go down about 15% into December, and all of a sudden, we're no longer that far away from the neutral rate. In fact, we're there, and we don't need to hike rates anymore. So, you know, the Fed has now put themselves into a box of being market dependent, which is problematic because asset prices are a reflection of economic activity, and right now there's a lack of linkage between asset prices and what's happening in real underlying economic growth and fundamentals.
Two of the most prominent financial figures are talking about the Trump strategy on tariffs. Jamie Dimon, the banker, says that it just might be that the tariffs are really paying off for the United States. The economist Gary Cohn says that tariffs simply don't work, and in fact, they actually hurt the economy.
I tend to agree with Cohn's opinion on this. Where Jamie Dimon's coming from is that he's saying that tariffs are working because we may actually get, you know, some type of favorable trade agreement with China. But let's not forget that in January of 2018, we started this fight with China. This was, you know, Trump coming out. He implemented the trade tariffs. And again, let's talk about numbers real quick. Just, you know, us Americans, we were doing $15 billion in exports. It falls to two. So let's say that we resolve all this and we get back to $15 billion in tariffs, in exports. What did we win? The issue is that we've got to create a better environment going forward to increase exports. If China simply says, hey, I'm going to buy more soybeans from you, then that means that somewhere else in the world they're buying less soybeans. It's the economic environment on trade is a net zero game at the end of the day. So, and since we operate on a global economy now, we're no longer just the U.S. like we were post-World War II. We were the manufacturing epicenter of the world because the rest of the world had blown themselves up after the war. So we had to rebuild them. But that's no longer the case today. We're now very global, very flat, very interconnected. So an increase here and a decrease there winds up actually having a net zero effect. So the key ingredient as to whether or not we win this trade war is whether or not we get favorable trade terms on IP, technology, et cetera, going forward. That's the real key here.
Yeah, and especially when you're talking you mentioned, for example, soybeans. Yeah, the farmers here in America sure are glad about it, but how does it impact things globally, though? Not quite as
right.
good. Yeah. All right. Always good insight. Thanks so much, Lance Roberts. You can find him on Twitter at Lance Roberts. His website, realinvestmentadvice.com. Coming up, Starbucks decides to dump its two-tiered rewards program.
Money talks as the WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
Starbucks is adjusting its rewards program as it deals with intense competition from Dunkin', McDonald's, and others. Let's learn more from RJ Hottavy, consumer equity strategist at Morningstar here in Chicago. RJ, what is Starbucks doing?
Yeah, so what Starbucks is doing is making some enhancements to its loyalty program. Instead of being the single product reward, so the free cup of coffee or free drink, they're expanding the rewards that consumers can redeem with their stars based on the transactions and the dollars they've spent, adding some of the gift products, some food products. And ultimately, I think that giving your top customers greater flexibility is a positive. And for that very reason you pointed out, it is getting much more competitive out there. You want to be able to lock in as many consumers as you can. I mean, consumers inherently have choice where they get their coffee from. And I think giving flexibility to your best consumers is certainly a positive.
And when it comes to getting people into sort of your ecosystem, it seems like it is just absolutely vital now to get them using your app, collecting your rewards, because they're not necessarily going to do that with three or four different places for coffee.
You're absolutely right. It certainly is a first-mover advantage game, and Starbucks was one of the early pioneers in the loyalty app field. So I think that this is a way for them to keep their competitive edge. You know, the benchmark we usually use at Morningstar when looking at this is that if your loyalty customers are coming into stores three times as often as a non-loyalty program member, that then you're doing something right. And Starbucks is right on that cusp. But certainly there's even some room for improvement. We've seen some of the leaders in the space get as high as four or five times with their loyalty members. And I think this is where Starbucks needs to get to over time, is really keeping those customers coming back, not only coming back more often, but spending more often. And I think having this flexibility. And I think what's interesting about this program, too, is by giving consumers a greater assortment of products that they can use and spend their points on, it'll ultimately open up some gifting features where you as a reward member could send a gift to somebody else. It's something that we've seen Starbucks have great success with in China, and I think that it could be have some success in the U.S. market as well.
Yeah, how is the rest of the world doing at the pace compared to the Chicago area, the U.S.?
Yeah, it's still kind of in early days. Certainly, this is the market where they've had the most time, and it's been the most developed in terms of the loyalty program. But we're starting to see some success with that, particularly in China, but a few other European markets as well. So we're starting to see them really start to build out this ecosystem in other markets of the world. And again, the goal is to keep as many customers as you have locked in and engaging with your platform. So, earlier stages, but we are seeing the company have some early success. And to be honest, China's a market where you're seeing some learnings come out of it too, because the mobile app adoption and ordering there is so far ahead of the U.S. So, broadly speaking, not just Starbucks, but it's been interesting to watch.
We also see a lot of products that are like Dunkin' Donuts have been around for a long time. They're doing pretty well too, aren't they?
They are. I mean, the whole space is one of the fastest growing, especially coffee space, is one of the fastest growing categories within the overall restaurant space. And so it's benefited not just Starbucks, but other players like Dunkin', like McDonald's, a lot of specialty coffee chains that are popping up in certain regions. And with those many players coming up, I mean, it gives consumers inherently a lot of choices. So the way for companies to combat that is to find ways to lock in their customer and keep them coming back, like Starbucks has done. That said, I mean, even the loyalty programs themselves are getting more competitive with the offers that are there. It's getting harder and harder to keep those the consumers coming back. You really have to up your game in terms of what you offer there and the variety of products. But I think Starbucks will certainly have to push us even further. Different things like music and other content will probably have to be packaged even above what they're already doing this. So loyalty programs themselves, I mean, that we're seeing a lot of competition on that front.
RJ Hanavi, consumer equity strategist at Morningstar here in Chicago. Thanks for being with us as always. Travel Tuesday is still ahead. We'll check an annual ranking of the best and worst airlines in the U.S. And Bloomberg checks the markets next.
WBBM News Time, 12:25. Let's take a look at the markets with Elisa Parenti.
Chris, the Dow is up now 98 points, or a third of a percent. NASDAQ on the rise by 37. S&P up 12. The Wintrust WBBM Chicago Index from Bloomberg is back in the green, up a quarter percent. Regulators from the SEC reject claims by Elon Musk that the agency is unfairly trying to silence him. In a filing, the SEC says it's, quote, stunning that the billionaire continues to fire off tweets about Tesla without consulting others, despite having agreed to a court-ordered settlement requiring him to do so. Tesla is in the red today, down a quarter percent and lower by almost 20% since the beginning of the year. Now let's turn to Pete Manhart at Bates Commodities in Normal. Pete?
We've had mixed prices here today. Most of the day we're lower, but at the moment mixed again. July corn unchanged. The December corn up a quarter. Beans for May down 1.5 at 904 and a quarter. Novembers are down 3/4. And May wheat's up 1.25 at 458. Mixed on the day all day long. We expect it to continue that way into the close. And this is Pete Manhart at Bates Commodities in Normal.
Thank you, Pete. With business at 25 and 55, live from the Bloomberg Newsroom, Elisa Parenti, News Radio 780 and 105.9 FM.
This is Chicago's all-news station, News Radio 780 and 105.9 FM.
The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
WBBM News Time, 12:30. Good afternoon. I'm Cisco Cotto.
And I'm Chris Kreidel. These are the top stories on News Radio WBBM.
Stocks are up today. We'll see what's elevating the markets.
Travel Tuesday, an annual ranking of best and worst U.S. airlines is out. Plus, Boeing issues a corporate response to questions about its jets.
Some people cutting the cord or finding it difficult to manage the various subscription and streaming options.
Illinois Supreme Court rejects a petition to have former Chicago police officer Jason Van Dyke resentenced in the Laquan McDonald murder case.
Wall Street, the Dow up 85, NASDAQ is up 36, the S&P is up 10 points, and oil today is down about a third of a percent.
A nice afternoon ahead, mostly sunny with a high of 50. It's 45 degrees right now at O'Hare.
The Noon Business Hour is presented by Old Second Bank. Markets are gaining ground today. To talk about it, we're joined by Art Hogan, Chief Market Strategist at National Securities in New York. Art, what do you make of what you're seeing on Wall Street today?
Interesting little run we've had. So coming off a pretty positive week last week, we were keeping that momentum going here this week. I think the three main drivers, you know, are still with us. I think we have a Fed that's continuing to be patient with monetary policy. We'll hear more about that tomorrow. We've got although the incremental news has been slow, it feels like we're at we have some light at the end of the tunnel with the U.S.-China trade talks. And certainly the end of the fourth quarter earnings reporting season has stabilized our estimates for 2019. So we haven't seen the estimates go down much over the last 3 weeks. So that stabilization is helping investors feel like those earnings were better than feared, and probably the first and second quarter will be better than feared as well.
Among some of the areas that we're looking at today, Apple is announcing a faster, smarter iMac. Tell us about that.
Yeah, it's amazing. So Apple's actually got a big event on March 25th, and they don't usually do this, right? So what they did was they got all the hardware news out of the way. They reported several changes in the iMac. They didn't make any changes in 2018. So on Tuesday, today, they updated the 21.5-inch iMac with Retina display and the 27-inch iMac with Retina 5K display. So what's exciting about that is they've got processor speed with the latest Intel chip and the AMD graphics card in there, so it's just a faster processor, better graphics, and what they usually save all of this for their event. So I guess that means the event's got some more surprises to it that don't have anything to do with the upgrades to the current hardware.
Is there a need for more iMacs?
There's always a need for upgrading, right? So it's regardless of what you do, we all need faster processing speeds. So with Apple not having made any changes to their iMac family in 2018, it was about 14 months since the last time we've seen any upgrades. It was just time for them to get faster and for the graphics to get better. So it's just a function of keeping up with the changes in new technology so that their offerings are current. And that's right. So if you're in that Apple ecosystem and you're working slower than the guy next to you, you're going to want to upgrade to that. So the upgrade cycles are slower on the iMacs than they are on the iPhones, but lo and behold, we got them today.
Ultimately, from Apple, they do keep having to make announcements about products and enhanced products, but is it the services? For an investment standpoint, if you're looking to put money into Apple, do you have to see even more growth in the services because people are keeping their phones and computers longer?
They sure are, and that's the tricky part, right? So you want your rapid growth to be at your server side, and that's exactly what Apple is showing. So when at their last earnings report, one of the amazing things is that the movement and the short period of time, about 18 months, they went from, call it 10% of revenues to 17% of revenues, and they hope to get to 30% of revenues just being that all wrapped into services. And I think that's important because the margins on the services are much higher than the margins on the hardware. And the services are what keep you tied to Apple, right? We always like call it the Apple ecosystem, but the more tied into that, the more likely you are to stay at Apple hardware user. So, yeah, that's a very important part. And the March 25th event, which is expected to reveal some new services, including streaming TV platform and Apple News, is just going to be more of the same, right? We want to own more of your time online.
Let's talk about pot. Seems like every day there's something in the news now about it. Tilray stock is up about 3.5% today, maybe a little more than that. Talk about Tilray specifically, and then more in general, the challenge of investing in various pot companies, because at this point it's still early. Who's going to be the winner? Who's going to be the loser?
Yeah, it is early. Tilray's a Canadian company, and Canada was ahead of us in the United States in terms of legalization on a national basis. We've got about 33 states where some form of marijuana use is legal, whether for recreational use or for medical use in the United States. But on the federal level, there just hasn't been a mandate. So it's very early days. That probably changes. This is an evolution, not a revolution. And when you are investing in evolutions, you know, there are going to be things that don't evolve and end up being wise investments. So I think this is very much of a basket approach. If you can find a good fund that invests in a basket of these things, there are ETFs that will give you exposure to cannabis, but very much like the start of the internet, you know, in 1997, 98, 99, you know, a good 97% of those companies don't exist anymore, right? The same thing probably will be true in the cannabis sector. And I think that the winners are going to far outpace, even the kind of dramatic growth, the crony growth that we saw for the start of the internet, only because, you know, we haven't just scratched the surface of, you know, CBD and medical uses and all sorts of other things related to cannabis. But it's early days in the United States, so it's really buyer beware time, because the United States government on a federal level could as easily take away the ability for anybody to deal in cannabis, or they could make it a federally mandated thing that is okay nationwide, right? So that's where it gets binary and that's where it gets tricky. So this is not for your faint of heart.
Good to talk to you today. Thanks for joining us. Art Hogan, Chief Market Strategist at National Securities in New York. Up next, Travel Tuesday, Boeing responding to safety questions while a list of best and worst airlines in the U.S. is out. We'll take a look at that.
Information to make cash and save cash. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
It's Travel Tuesday here on the Noon Business Hour. Boeing management is speaking out in the wake of a second deadly crash involving one of its 737 MAX jets. And also, we have an annual ranking of U.S. airlines. Joe Schwederman is joining us, professor of public services and director of the Chaddick Institute at DePaul here in Chicago. Joe, let's begin with Boeing. Management obviously trying to scramble as they work to fix the problems and handle the PR and litigation and everything. They're now saying that there may be a software update that is needed. Bring us up to date on this.
Yeah, that's right. The CEO, Muhlenberg, came out with a letter today, and people are reading every word of that between the lines. And let's just say yesterday was a really bad day for Boeing, with evidence of some of the concerns about this aircraft being predated even the second disaster. But now today, this letter makes clear that there is probably a software fix, a technological fix, and training changes that are coming that could make this airline fly-worthy again. And that's generated some optimism that they're getting more confident they know how to fix this plane.
Now, you're not a lawyer. I'm not a lawyer. But as soon as they come out and say there's a software fix that they can put on these planes, it almost sounds like they're saying, yeah, there was a problem that maybe should have been addressed.
I think that's right. And I don't think Boeing in the early phase of this were saying we have 100% confidence in this airplane and then saying those kind of things. And now I think they're saying that, you know, with the way the engines we're seeing were put on the aircraft required some new experimental software, some new anti-stall system. And it's likely that that's going to be the problem. And they will probably be subject to some lawsuit activity. And they may well lose on that, since it was evident that there were some red flags in the air before this. That said, I think it's becoming more apparent that hopefully by mid-April, these planes will be back in the air.
Let's take a look at the entire sector. We have a so-called list of the top U.S. airlines, the best and worst airlines in the U.S., according to this new ranking. What do we see, Joe?
Yeah, this is interesting. This is by the points guy, so this shouldn't be confused with some academic ranking or more technical ranking. They have a lot of fun with their rollout of this, but they use the same metrics, you know, complaints and late flights and everything else. And no big surprise that Delta came out on top. They seem to do really well in this, both for their on-time performance and just for the relatively few complaints they get. But noteworthy, United has clawed its way up to 4 out of 10. So United is you know, really showing some nice turnaround from several years ago.
They were like 10th or 12th back then, I recall.
You know, it is remarkable that United, you know, took it on the chin last year with some of the customer service issues, and they were at the bottom and on time. And they really made a public statement that they're determined to get that on-time performance up and involuntary denied boardings down. And they've delivered on that. So they're actually ahead of American, and that's probably the most significant thing for them with their head-to-head competition here in Chicago. American has dropped to 6, which is not a good thing.
Always good insight. Thank you, Joe Schwederman, professor of public services, director of the Chaddick Institute at DePaul here in Chicago. This time tomorrow, Personal Finance Wednesday, still to come. Why cord cutting can be a complicated process.
Making sense of your dollars. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
The options are increasing for the people who decide to leave cable, but it can be very confusing on which way to go and how to go for content. Let's discuss the choices with Tim Hanlon, founder and CEO of the media consultancy firm Verter Group here in Chicago. Tim, help us sort this out.
Hi, Chris. We've talked about this on multiple occasions, but it's really starting to become more of a mainstream situation where I think every average consumer, right, it's not just the early millennials or the younger age groups, recognize that the idea of watching television is becoming increasingly balkanized. And that is the best of times or the worst of times, right? There's more choice of programming than ever before. The problem is that a lot of those services, whether they be Netflix or Hulu or the myriad of other subscription-based services that are coming out, niches of various content, they all have price tags attached to them. And what we're really starting to see in a much more mainstream way is essentially a headache of too many services battling it out for the average consumer's wallet. And the real question is how many going forward can the average consumer or even the well-moneyed consumer pay relative to all the programming that's out there and or what they currently experience with a cable bundle.
Not to mention all the passwords that you may, you know, lose one of your passwords and you have to go through it all over again just to see a movie.
Well, there's that. But, you know, it's also interesting, too, when you're trying to watch a movie, right? There's something, a term that we call viewer arbitrage, right, where you're in the mood to watch a particular show or a movie, and because of all these different subscriptions that you have, there's a likelihood that it's out there. The problem is, where is it? And have I already
exactly
paid for it?
Yeah, no, you're exactly right. So you end up having to go through all of your services in order to find what you want to watch.
Yeah, and I think that's going to be, I think we're going to sort of see that in the relative short term, all these services basically competing. But what we really haven't sort of experienced yet is the inevitable economic, macroeconomic downturn. And it's cyclical and it's likely to happen at some point in the next number of months or years, depending on your perspective. But I think that's really when we're going to start to see a shakeout of all of these services. I mean, at last count, I think in the United States, there are 300 plus subscription television video services that one can subscribe to. That may be a few hundred too much for many people.
Now, are we going to see, say, for example, maybe Amazon is poised to best do this, but where you will once again end up with one place where you get all of that, your video and your music and everything in one place instead of multiple places?
Yeah, there is a bit of that, Cisco. We talked a little bit about this last week with the bundling of Hulu and Spotify for a promotional period. I think you'll see a bit more of that. An Amazon, a Roku, a few others, maybe a Comcast even, could act sort of as a platform for all of this sort of choice. But I think also those platforms become the place by which promotional opportunities come, where some mixing and some mingling and some cost reduction if you bundle a few services. So what's unbundling now, I think, may be rebundled in the months and years to come, preferably with some promotional goodness that maybe those platforms could provide.
We will continue to follow this story. Very interesting. Tim Hanlon is founder and CEO of the media consultancy firm Verter Group here in Chicago. And if you missed any part of today's Noon Business Hour, we'll have the replay podcast available shortly at WBBMNewsRadio.com and the Radio.com app.
WBBM News Time 12:55, a check of the markets from Bloomberg, sponsored by Urban Countertops. Here's Elisa Parenti.
Cisco, we continue to see gains. The Dow up 48 points, or 0.2%. NASDAQ up 31. S&P higher by 8. The Wintrust WBBM Chicago Index from Bloomberg gaining 0.1%. It's not a great first day for stock in Fox. That's the business that's not part of Disney's $71 billion acquisition of Fox's entertainment company. The corporation that's made up of assets not included in the deal started trading today under the ticker Fox, and the stock is down about 4%. Usually when a company makes big changes to a loyalty rewards program, it's because it's not working. That is not the case at Starbucks. Members of that chain's membership program generate 40% of Starbucks U.S. sales. It wants even more people to join. So starting next month, customers won't have to wait for 300 stars to get something. Now they'll be able to get stuff with only 25 stars earned. With Business at 25 and 55, live from Bloomberg, Elisa Parenti, News Radio 780 and 105.9 FM.
WBBM and HD Chicago, WCFS FM and HD1 Elmwood Park, Chicago.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.